It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us here from Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, the last couple of weeks, we've talked about some of the circumstances that many times touch and concern the capacity of someone who makes out a will, whether or not they're under undue influence, what it means to have testamentary capacity in the state of North Carolina. And, of course, these issues are center stage in what is known as a caveat proceeding or a challenge to the legality of a will, the enforceability of a last will and testament. And so today we want to talk about some of the procedural aspects of this caveat proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go there, though, Ben, Wes and I are very tuned in, if you will, to the complexity of a caveat proceeding.
Yeah.
Wes is going to explain some of the procedures, but just real quickly, the entire state is immediately, if you will, locked down.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real problem. This is very significant. If one is attempting to manage property, manage a business, get to assets, deal with certain stocks, bonds, you know, right now the stock market is at an all-time high. Suppose someone dies and we feel that it's appropriate that their stock portfolio be liquidated based on the market being so very high.
Right.
And yet we're unable to do that because there's a caveat proceeding, which, by the way, easily could be a year, 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, what if the stock market, you know, has a significant decline?
Can be real harm to
right.
that. Right.
So they are very, it's a very significant, very significant circumstances flow out of the filing of a caveat. So lawyers like Wes and myself on the front end, as we've talked about at the program last week and the week before, and most good lawyers are going to do everything they can to try to substantiate, document, bolster the file, if you will, of estate planning on the estate planning side so as to hopefully avoid any kind of challenge to the will that they prepare. Letters from doctors, multiple meetings with the clients, independent, confidential, one-on-one meeting with the client. All of some of the things that we've talked about so as to hopefully mitigate the opportunity or the chance that there will be a challenge to the will.
Okay. All right. Well, now, Wes, we have talked about the various reasons why a will caveat might start. And we've also mentioned some of those wonderful terms like the object of one's bounty or natural object of one bounty. And so I think that's, those are great terms. But you're narrowing it down. We've talked many times about the large funnel and how you get things narrowed down. So now you're to the point where you're taking an action. Who can bring it? Who can bring an action?
Great question, Ben. You know, it's people that have standing. You know, if you have standing, meaning let's say there was a previous will where you think you should take under that previous will, but your rights under the previous will were superseded by a subsequent will, then you would have standing in the event that there's not a previous will and you would take through intestacy, meaning the statutory scheme for how assets pass if you die without a will.
You're in the line.
So standing basically means that you've got a dog in the fight here. You know, you could recover in some way. You have an interest in it. You can't just walk up to the courthouse and pick up a file and say, oh, I don't like this will that this guy I don't know did. I'm going to file a caveat, you know.
Be here all day.
We're not going to do that. But that's basically what we look at as far as who the party is that will bring it. You know, I'm not going to get too much into the weeds here because I know the procedure part of this gets a little bit boring and it doesn't make for really good radio, I would assume.
So you got somebody who is a party who has standing there. Where do they go?
Well,
besides to their lawyer.
First of all, you know, before you're talking about challenging a will, you need to get with an attorney who actually practices in that area frequently, who understands the nuances of dealing with a will caveat. It's different than a typical plaintiff defendant lawsuit, as we've talked about before. There's a whole set of statutes in North Carolina that deal specifically with caveats to wills. And, you know, there are some risks with regard to that. In the event you don't have a good faith basis for bringing the caveat, then you could be standing before a superior court judge at some point in time, and that judge might be making a decision as to whether you pay the other side's attorney's fees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you've got to have a good faith basis for bringing it. And so, you know, that attorney is going to help you understand the benefits of bringing the caveat, the risks of bringing the caveat, the timing with regard to the caveat, when you need to bring it, which is, by the way, 3 years mm-hmm. from when the will was probated. It's going to help you understand all these nuances. It's going to ask questions about the will itself. It's going to get a copy of the estate file, where we see what will it is that we're challenging.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to ask questions about, well, how would you benefit in the event that this will is set aside?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big issue too, because we've got to look at what the previous will says, and we may not have the previous will.
Right.
We may know about the previous will.
That's right.
Understand there was a previous will, but where is the previous will?
Mm-hmm.
And okay, I don't have the original of the previous will, but I do have a copy of the previous will. Well, not to get too stuck in the weeds here again, but
oh, yeah.
What happens then?
Well, there's a whole field of biblical studies of things that weren't actually there that we believe would have been yeah. there if they were had existed.
But procedurally speaking,
yeah.
you know, in the event that you win your caveat and you have a copy of a previous will, then you go through a procedure to have that copy then probated,
mm-hmm.
which is, again, somewhat of a quasi lawsuit before the clerk of court to make a determination as to whether that's going to be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
So be that as it may, step number one, get to someone who deals with these issues frequently so that they can help you analyze the issues and make a determination as to how to best proceed.
Okay. So you've got so you believe you have a case. You and your lawyer believe you have
yeah,
one.
And, you know, why would you believe you have a case? I think that's important. Obviously, if we see that the will left everything to the caregiver,
mm-hmm.
left out those natural objects of the bounty,
mm-hmm.
you know, left everything to the one child, maybe, and left the other children out. If it's just a strange disposition of the person's assets,
mm-hmm.
that might raise a red flag. Okay. Next thing, was this done at a time where this person's capacity has greatly diminished
right,
to
right.
the point where they didn't understand the natural objects of the bounty, of their bounty, did not understand what assets they had, didn't understand the effect of a will, those type things.
All those things about diminished capacity.
That's right. Right. What kind of condition was the person in at that point in time? Next, you know, was this a will that was printed off the internet and
mm-hmm.
the neighbors next door came over, or was this more of an official kind of ceremony at a mm-hmm. lawyer's office?
Right.
Where, you know, we've got an attorney who hopefully is asking the right questions and making sure that the person does have the capacity. So those are some of the things that we would look at. And if it doesn't smell quite right, then obviously get in front of a lawyer who deals with these issues, and that attorney can help you decide how to proceed.
Okay.
But if the decision is to go ahead and proceed and challenge the will, then the appropriate procedure is to, you know, file that will caveat properly pled. There are certain things that need to be pled in it that the attorney will take care of. Along with that, not to get into the details, but the statute says you have to post a bond of $200. I think
mm-hmm.
it's just an old statute.
Yeah.
It's just security. It's
yeah.
not really much of anything. And then we always, when we file a caveat, we always, with it, send a order to the clerk of court with it, freezing the estate.
Okay.
Specifically worded.
Like a stay.
That's right. So that for several reasons. Number one, obviously, in the event that the will that is being challenged is not the final will, then we don't know how the assets are going to pass. So no assets need to be distributed.
So are you in Superior Court?
Superior Court.
Okay. So it doesn't matter what the amount is they're talking about. It's still going to be in Superior Court.
Great question. Always transferred from the clerk of court to Superior Court.
Mm-hmm.
And always jury.
Right.
Don't have a choice in will caveats.
Mm-hmm.
The issue.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Divisit vel non. That's the Latin term for,
mm-hmm.
I think it's the thing is what it is, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is the will what it is, right? That issue has to go to the jury. Actually, now, the judge can dismiss.
It is or it is not.
There you go. It is or it is not. You're better at Latin than I am.
I remember that in high school.
I know about 25 phrases, and they all have to do with the law. That's it. So, but the judge can dismiss the case if there's not sufficient evidence. So it's a jury matter, but that's not a guarantee that it gets to the jury.
Right.
Because so if you're not able to develop your evidence, then you could be subject to...
I would imagine that's a task, is probably to get the judge to rule. That's a task of one party or the other, is to get the judge to make that rule.
Well, that's going to be... We're jumping ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
But, again, that's going to be after some discovery has been done.
Okay. Well, let's get to we'll get to that part about discovery. So you've got it in court now, and you've got the notice sent to the clerk to freeze everything. And so now we come back to what's next. And that's coming up in just a moment. If you'd like to call in with your question, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak, and let's talk legal with Harvell and Collins. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us, and we're talking about will caveat issues, and we're up to the point where it's at the courthouse steps now. Right?
Yeah, we were talking off the air during the commercial about this order freezing the assets, just real briefly, you know.
Well, Cecil had set the stage saying that if you had a stock portfolio, it seems pretty obvious that all of these sold.
Or any... Yeah. Reasonable issue. Let's say, for instance, that their mortgage is on the property that need to be paid.
Right.
Let's say that there's a pending sale. Maybe the person died with an offer to purchase and contract on the table, something that would survive the death and yet was a contract that would bind the estate. Any kind of reasonable activity such as this, what would happen is that there would be a petition filed, and there would be an opportunity for both sides to be heard, of course, and then there would be a decision made by the court that, yes, let's proceed with the closing.
Okay.
The price was reasonable. Yes, let's proceed with allowing the mortgages to be paid, the taxes, the insurance, the general upkeep of the property so that there's not a diminution in value as a result of not maintaining the property.
But any benefits derived would be set aside. Well, generally.
Right. They'd be held by the estate.
Things are just held in escrow.
They would not be distributed.
No distribution.
Right.
Because we don't know how to distribute them.
Yes. Correct. That's the whole argument.
Right. Yeah. So also those funds can't be used, you know, to pay the defense of the propounders of the will, those who say the will is the will. They have to, you know, basically on their own coin with regard to that. All right. So, you know, once you file the caveat, then there's an alignment hearing. The parties go before the Superior Court judge. This is a very short hearing, somewhat just like a routine type thing where the parties report to the court who aligns with what side.
Right.
Then an order is entered in the case. These are the individuals who are the caveators, those who are challenging the will, and these are the individuals who are the propounders, those who say that the will is what it is, right? And then there could be people who are interested who are been given notice about it, like family members, so on and so forth, who just are neutral and just say, whatever happens, happens. I'm not involved in it.
Right.
That's means you don't align. So then the case basically moves forward with the standard things we've talked about on the program before. You're going to have your written discovery normally that goes out about that point in time. That's interrogatories, which are basically questions about things like, are there any previous wills? Questions about who has any information with regard to the condition of the person.
Is this where you can depose people?
It is, but we're doing the interrogatory, the written questions
first. That's the first
part. Yeah. Yep. So just general questions. Then we have requests for production of documents in a caveat case. If the issue is that the person is of advanced age and diminished mental capacity, then you're almost always, it's really not almost, is you're always going to ask for the medical records relative to that that time period. So, and you know, over the years we have been cases have been broken wide open by medical records. Mm-hmm. You know, you just don't know until you have those records to see what condition the person was in at or around the time that the document was executed.
But as we've said before, even that can be countered by a witness who says there was a moment of clarity when they did.
Right.
Did this, so.
Then you're going to then get into probably after you get the interrogatories and requests for production documents done and you get those responses, get them complete. Then you know a lot more at that point in time because you have the records, you know mm-hmm. who the medical providers were, you know who the witnesses were.
You're narrowing it down.
You know who the friends were, you know who people who the propounder says that knew the condition of the person. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a lot more information. So then you make a decision as to who is going to be deposed at that point in time, mm-hmm. meaning who are we going to require subpoena to go to a deposition so that the attorney can ask questions under oath to find out, you know, things relative to the case.
Mm-hmm.
And once all of that is completed, I mean, basically that's the discovery process here. There could be a process of subpoenaing bank records or stuff like that from third parties. It just depends on what the circumstances are. But nevertheless, you get all that information together, and then basically once you organize that information, maybe it's time to try the case.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you weren't able to gather enough, according to the propounder side. Maybe they file a motion for summary judgment.
Right, exactly.
Then we're having to go before the Superior Court judge, and the Superior Court judge is looking at the issues, looking at whether there is a genuine issue of material fact.
Mm-hmm.
Again, getting into the weeds a little bit,
yeah.
But this is
well,
the standard.
That's part of the process.
With regard to whether there was undue influence.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a genuine issue of material fact as to whether there was lack of testamentary capacity? Is there a genuine issue of material fact as it relates to the formalities of the will?
Mm-hmm.
Were the formalities as required in North Carolina not met? And in the event that the court determines that there's not a genuine issue of material fact on those issues after you present this kind of summary of evidence to the court,
mm-hmm.
then the single judge would have the right to then grant a summary judgment to dismiss that particular claim. Or it could be all three claims, and then the case is over.
Right.
But in the event it survives summary judgment, then it is a jury trial.
Mm-hmm.
And the case is tried very much like a plaintiff versus defendant type case. Jury of 12.
Mm-hmm.
And the issues with regard to lack of capacity, undue influence, and issues with regard to execution mm-hmm. are all considered
all right.
by the jury.
All right, we'll have that part coming up in just a moment. We go to the jury right after this. All right, we're talking about will caveats and with Cecil West from Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. And West, we're at that point now where we're on to trial here now. So, and it's presented,
right.
as you said, much like we would kind of normally understand a case to be presented
right.
at this point.
Well, that's correct. And, you know, here in Eastern North Carolina, you don't have this Superior Court running all the time.
Right.
You know, you have
sessions.
Right. You have sessions of court, Carteret County, for example, has 12 sessions of court, and there's usually each year two-week sessions, and the rest of them are just 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
So normally if you have a caveat case that's going to be heard, unless it's just a short, maybe it's narrowed to one issue, then it's going to take up the whole week. And people ask that question all the time, being like, oh, my gosh, that's going to take all week? Why is that going to take all week?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the procedure of picking a jury – in the procedure of getting them impaneled and then doing the opening statements and then mm-hmm. the plaintiff putting on all of the evidence they need to put on and any kind of evidentiary rulings along the way and any kind of motions then for directed verdict and then the defense putting on all their evidence and another motion for directed verdict and all the back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It just takes time to mm-hmm. work through the process.
Right.
So typically a caveat case, you know, you're normally going to have, you know, some medical experts. You're normally going to have maybe several friends. You're going to have the people who actually witnessed the will. When I mm-hmm. say friends, I mean people who live around
sure.
the person, who may know the person, neighbors. There could be an attorney who is a witness. A lot of evidentiary issues with that, what the attorney can say, what he can't say, mm-hmm. a lot of that kind of stuff going on. A lot of complicated evidentiary issues like the application of the dead man statute, about what the deceased said.
Mm-hmm.
Interested people normally can't testify about what they said, about the deceased, what he said to benefit themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But that can get kind of complicated. So it normally takes 3 or 4 days, maybe the whole week, to try a caveat case. The burden is with the caveator. That means the person who's filed the caveat, the person mm-hmm. who is trying to challenge the will, has the burden to prove, by the greater weight of the evidence,
mm-hmm.
civil standard, that the person lacked testamentary capacity, or that it was under undue influence, or there was a formality that wasn't met with regard to the will. So that comes back to the caveator. It's your responsibility, like as a plaintiff, to prove that.
Okay.
And in the event you're not able to do that and not able to convince all of those jurors, then you don't win your case.
Right.
So that is the process that we go through, and then out comes the jury and we find out what they say.
Yes. And well, and then but what they say is going to be, is it basically a yes, no? I mean, it's either this will does stand or does not stand. And then you've got, what does stand?
Right. That is normally the issue. Sometimes is broken down into did the person have requisite capacity? Yes, no. Was the person under undue influence? Yes, no. And, ultimately, mm-hmm. was this the last will? Yes, no, that type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So in the event it's not, then that's done. That's it. The jury doesn't say, oh, I'm going to decide I don't like this will. I'm going to give this daughter a little bit more money over here. It's
happen.
Yes, no. It's the will. It is or it isn't.
It's not.
So then, obviously, if it's not, then if we have a previous will
mm-hmm.
that was revoked by the will that's being challenged, then the previous will is automatically revived.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If we have the original, if we have a copy, then we might have to go through another process.
Yeah.
If there's not a previous will, then the order of the court would be that the estate passes through intestacy.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of twists and turns and caveats.
Mm-hmm.
And I failed miserably today in keeping us out of the weeds. And I apologize.
No, but some of those weeds turn into flowers. That's
yeah,
all right.
Well.
Well, the bottom line is that we have to have lawyers that get into the weeds.
Yes, that's right.
We also want to do everything that we can do to stay out of the weeds.
Yes.
And that is what our listeners need to hear more than anything else.
Hopefully some wheat has been separated from the chaff.
If you have
right,
a loved one, an elder person in your family or friend, please make sure that their will is done with the utmost of integrity.
And to get that right advice at the right time, call on the folks at Harvell & Collins online at harvellandcollins.com, 726-9050.